Before I begin, I'd just like to quickly thank the organizers of this meeting for giving me the opportunity to speak here today. You guys are awesome. All right, so the title of my presentation was already given here, so I'll just kind of jump right into my introductory information. So Nodal is an outlying member of the TGF-beta superfamily of signaling molecules. And like other members of the signaling family, signaling is achieved through the binding of two cell surface receptors, the ALK receptors. And this results in the downstream phosphorylation of the SMADs, either 2 or 3. And then they can interact with SMAD4 and go on to the nucleus and part their mediation on gene regulation. Unique to the nodal signaling pathway is the EGF-CFC co-receptor. And there's also a couple of inhibitors, Cerberus and Lefty. So Nodal is most well known for its roles during embryonic development, which I won't go into too much. But it's also been implicated in placenta development. But this status still remains kind of unclear. And again, that is nodal from an embryonic source. Later in my presentation, I'll talk about placental development, but that is from a maternal source or a uterine source. So this kind of leads me into my question, does nodal play a role in the uterus in facilitating successful pregnancy outcome? So in initiating this project, we first wanted to generate a profile of the nodal expression in the uterus throughout pregnancy. So the first observation we made is that in the non-pregnant state, nodal was not expressed within the uterus. However, once we mated them, we found that we could detect nodal throughout the full uterus from day 0.5 to 3.5 days postcoitum. Interestingly, on day 4.5, when we stained for beta-gal activity, it created this banding pattern along the proximal distal axis of the uterine horn. This indicates that nodal is expressed and interspersed with areas of no nodal expression. This is interesting because day 4.5 coincides with the time of embryo implantation, and mice are a litter-bearing species. We thought perhaps this pattern correlates with embryo implantation in some way. And we'll see in the next slide that it actually does, but the embryos are implanting in these non-staining sites with nodal exclusively expressed between them. So we next wanted to see where this staining was restricted to in the cellular level. So we formed transverse sections through the uteri. In a non-pregnant state, we did not detect any nodal expression. However, in the peri-implantation period, we found that this expression was restricted to the glandular epithelium within the endometrium. And similarly, on day 4.5, we had both sections that contained staining and those that did not. And as I mentioned earlier, if we were to section through an area of no staining, we could catch the embryo as it was undergoing the implantation reaction. So coming back to the whole mount level, this is following implantation. So it's kind of hard to depict the expression at the whole mount level with photography, so I kind of made these little simple figures below. But following implantation, nodal is expressed between the deciduous swellings until around day 6.5 or 7.5, where it overlies the anti-mesometrial surface of the conceptus. By day 9.5, it switches over to the mesometrial surface, where it kind of remains up until the later stages of pregnancy. If we were to perform a transverse section through one of these uteri, we found that this nodal expression was restricted to a thin but distinct layer of the uterus as part of the decidua peristalis, or I believe it to be, that kind of overlies the lateral surface of the embryo and then underlying the mesometrial surface overlying the placenta here. I'm going to kind of come back and allude to this figure later in my presentation, so kind of make note of it. Okay, so we want to take a closer look at what the role nodal may be involved in the uterus in facilitating pregnancy. So we decided to generate a tissue-specific conditional knockout of nodal in the uterus. So in order to do this, we use the LOXP Cre recombinase system. So the Cre in these mice is expressed under the progesterone receptor promoter, and this is only turned on in females in the maternal reproductive tract and once they reach sexual maturity. And this allowed us to bypass embryonic lethality. This little schematic here illustrates the sites of PR Cre expression. And you can see it also includes the glandular epithelium where we saw nodal expressed during the early peri-implantation period. So we generated these mice and asked the question, do females who are devoid of nodal in the uterus provide any indication for a role during development? But before answering that question, we obviously wanted to verify that we had effectively and efficiently deleted the nodal gene from our targeted tissues. So we did this in a couple different ways, including at the genomic level. This is just at the protein level that was done with immunofluorescence. So we could not detect any nodal protein in our control non-pregnant state, as expected. However, we were able to detect it around the glandular epithelium during the early peri-implantation period. Kind of use these as our controls for conversely during the mutant phase, or mutant state, when we could not detect this protein in and around the glandular epithelium. All right, so once we verified deletion, we wanted to test the most basic reproductive capabilities of these females. So we simply set them up with wild-type males and then just allowed pregnancy to proceed and just kind of observe from a distance. So we observed two interesting observations, the first of which is that mutant females that did become plugged had reduced rates of establishing pregnancy in comparison to our heterozygous control mice. Furthermore, those that were able to enter the later stages of pregnancy were experiencing preterm birth on day 17.5 of development. So I think a lot of you guys work with mice. You know, this is 2 days before term, which comes on day 19.5 in mice. So we next want to take a look at the condition of the embryos leading up to this preterm birth. So we isolated them on days 15.5 and 16.5. And we found, as you can clearly see here, there's both a significant reduction in size and weight in comparison to our heterozygous control mice. So in this case, there's about a 35% reduction in size. So I usually have to point out that all these embryos do contain functional nodal. It's just that these ones here are growing in a uterine environment or maternal environment that is devoid of nodal. So next, we want to take a look at the placenta to see if it can give us any indication about what might be giving rise to this growth restriction or preterm birth. So just to familiarize or orient you, I've got here a D12.5 control placenta. It's not turning up too great. But there's a line of cells here, which is called the parietal trophoblast giant cell layer. And it generally forms the median between the fetal and maternal tissues that comprise the placenta. So there's 2 points I want to make before I show the phenotype. The first is that these fetal tissues are trying to penetrate far into the uterus so that they can establish a good vascularization for nourishment for the embryo. But at the same time, we have the maternal tissues, which are trying to prevent overpenetration, because that can be detrimental to the mother if it causes hemorrhaging in the uterus. So we have this nice balance. The second point is that as development proceeds, these fetal layers do kind of penetrate further up at the expense of the maternal tissues, but it's in a very timed and controlled manner. So this here is my experimental mice taken at the same time point on day 12.5. And you can see here there's a very big difference in the overall gross morphology of the placenta. Specifically, a lot of the maternal decidual bisalis, or maternal tissue, is diminished. Kind of at higher magnification, you could see those parietal trophoblast giant cells here kind of clustered around the maternal edge of the placenta. And the fetal layers comprise the majority of the placenta mass. We did in situ hybridization to really mark the layers that comprise the placenta. And this really highlighted a difference in that the day 12.5 experimental placenta actually seems to resemble a placenta of a much later stage. And this may be underlying why we're experiencing this preterm birth. So we next wanted to look into this further and decided to look at apoptosis in the placenta in the uterus, because nodal has been shown to be involved in apoptosis during follicular atresia. And what we found was in this experimental placenta in uterus, we had a decreased level of apoptosis from day 6.5 to 12.5 in comparison to our control. So we suspect that perhaps nodal is using apoptosis to mediate this penetration of the fetal layers. So in a normal situation, nodal emanating from a maternal source would prevent this overpenetration of the fetal layers at the expense of the maternal tissues. But then if we delete it, we don't have this mechanism, and then these fetal layers are able to consume the maternal tissues, and then eventually it kind of resembles a later stage placenta, which would kick back the signals to induce preterm delivery. I should have stipulated that earlier, and I'm going to say it, that the placenta is the source of the signals that induce labor in parturition. That was a critical point that I missed there. All right, so just to summarize, I showed that nodal exhibits embryo-dependent site-specific expression in the uterus at time of implantation, and when we delete it, we get a lot of adverse outcomes for pregnancy, including abnormal placentation, IUGR, and then preterm birth followed by embryonic loss. Just want to quickly acknowledge my advisor, Dr. Duford, and other members of the Duford lab, and also the Eric Hassan lab, which did the apoptosis data. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to field them. Thanks.
Question for you. Your first immunofluorescence or immunohistochemistry, you showed that nodal was preferentially expressed in the glandular epithelium. Am I correct in that?
In the verification data there?
Yeah, is that okay. Correct?
Yes.
And so that was at E4.5. And then when you showed your control staining for your transgenic, you could clearly see nodal in the luminal epithelium. So is it coming on in the luminal epithelium a little bit later, or
So in the early data I showed with nodal LAG-Z, which just mimics the sites or reports the sites of nodal expression, and that was within the glandular epithelium. But nodal is a signaling molecule that can act over long distances and so forth. But usually a lot of factors that are created in the glandular epithelium get excreted into the luminal epithelium. So I was thinking that perhaps that the immunofluorescence data, which shows the protein, could be where the protein is. But at the same time, that earlier data is where it's expressed at the mRNA level. Mm-hmm. Actually, in humans, they looked for nodal in the luminal epithelium just floating around in the urine fluid, and they were able to detect a lot of this protein. So okay. That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, that's probably a good hypothesis. Thanks.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's too bad Sarah stole my line about that. About that being an awesome talk. It really was good. I have a couple technical questions. The first one is with the nodal reporter line. Mm-hmm. You didn't really explain the nature of that. Is it just the promoter for nodal driving LAC-C?
Yes, it is. I know. I should have stipulated from. Yeah, it's showing where nodal is expressed as opposed to where the signal, like where the pathway is acting. Like we saw earlier, Dr. Dufort's, his LAC-C line, which shows where winds are acting. This is actually where nodal is expressed. It could be acting somewhere else downstream.
Okay, and then the second has to do with what you're calling tissue-specific deletion, right? I mean, the progesterone receptor is expressed elsewhere.
Yep.
And so do you know that everything is intrinsic to the deletion within the uterus, or is there a contribution of effects elsewhere?
I kind of glanced over it or glossed over it in the essence of time, but when we looked at that table, we do see an earlier phenotype. So only like half of them make it past implantation. So as you stipulated there, progesterone receptor is expressed elsewhere, including the ovary and the oviduct. So there could be something involved in ovulation, embryo transport, implantation. But I haven't yet looked at that and because of resources, but it is something that we obviously are going to get a full picture of our phenotype in these mouse strain.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much to all of our speakers.